Be reading the Word of God tonight from Mark chapter 4, verses 35 to 41. On the same day when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us cross over to the other side." Now when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was, and other little boats were also with him, and a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And then he arose and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. But he said to them, "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" And they feared exceedingly, and said to one another, "Who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him?"
In last week, we began a series, or Rob had the first sermon in a series entitled "The Glory of Christ." And this evening, we'll be looking at Mark 4 and him calming the storm at sea, something that highlights, of course, highlights him. And we don't have, ever since sailing ships ceased and the whaling industry failed, we don't have many good sailing ship stories, do we? Moby Dick and all that stuff. There was one that was close. It was Hurricane Lane, a Category 4 that almost hit the Pearl Harbor in August. It was amazing the number of ships, naval ships, that were there and sent out to sea to try to get away from the storm and not stay in a harbor and try to endure it. Recently, while reading through one of Faith Cook's numerous collections of Christian biographies, I ran across two stories of missionaries and sailing to their destination. I just want to mention two. First of all was Harriet Newell. She and her husband were some of the first American missionaries that joined with Adoniram Judson in going to India to work. And they had a four-month trip by sea, sailing ships to get there. 4 months at sea. And some of her diary entries, you wonder, they're never going to make it. Never. Harriet was expecting their first child on the way, and gave birth on the way, and there were storms at sea, and they thought they would all be lost. Says one diary entry, in the middle of a storm, she writes, "The vessel rocked violently all evening. About 11 o'clock, the cable broke." That was kind of a sea anchor that would slow their progress and they wouldn't get so far off course. "And we were dashed about all night. The anchor was lost, yet we were preserved from a sudden and awful death by the God who rules the seas." Another story had to do with Ezekiel Rogers, who, after the British Parliament passed the Book of Sports, if you've studied the Westminster Confession of Faith, you know that that piece of legislation dramatically changed things in Great Britain. And so there were the Puritans, of course, could not submit to that. And for instance, Ezekiel Rogers left to come to America. And there was such a special relationship with him and his congregation. His entire congregation left and followed him to the new colonies in America. And sure enough, there were 3 months of hazardous journeys upon the seas. Well, this evening we'll be looking at something that you would think would have been ordinary with so many men that fished. They were fishermen and knew the Sea of Galilee and were acquainted with its ways. And yet, they're terrified. and they think they're going to die. There's an outline in the bulletin. We just have three points to make. I want you to see, first of all, that it was Jesus who brought them into the storm. Notice verse 35. On that day when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the boat, they took him with them in the boat. Whose idea was it to go across the Sea of Galilee? Whose was it? It was the idea of Jesus. You know, sometimes we're fascinated by the storm, but we can also be diverted by the storm, distracted by the storm. Why were the disciples there in the first place? Why were they? Were they being punished? Had they disobeyed Jesus? Were they being chastised for their sins? No, there's no hint of that whatsoever. Were they ignoring him? Had they disobeyed him? No. He brought them there. Fred, I so appreciated your prayer that Jesus is the one who may take us into storms and is quite able to deliver us from them. They were there. The disciples were there in this death-threatening storm. They were there because they obeyed his word. He said, "Let's go." They said, "We're with you. We'll go." And yet, before the night is out, we have seasoned fishermen terrified at the severity of this storm. But they were there because they listened to Jesus. That's why they were there in the first place. You know, the early church were rather unanimous in their assessment that the Gospel of Mark are really the memoirs of Peter. And that Mark wrote his gospel out kind of with Peter standing over his shoulder giving him details. Eyewitness reports. Now, that view is still held in our day by many. It's interesting. Think of this gospel written by Mark with eyewitness accounts of Peter. And the original audience to whom Mark wrote would soon be reduced to a catacomb existence, hiding in caves, hiding in tombs beneath the streets of Rome because of the persecution of Nero. In the atmosphere of suffering and martyrdom, there were mass arrests and capital punishment. Fierce opposition threatened to overthrow the young church, new believers. Why were they there? Had they disobeyed the Lord? Had they been obstinate? We want to go our way and find peace and quietness. No. They were there because they were following the Lord. It is He who led them into the storm. Some years later, Peter in his first letter, 1 Peter 4 verse 12 would write, "Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you as though something strange were happening to you." How on earth could Peter say that? What did he know about it? Was he there at Rome hiding from the emperor? He could write that because one night, when he was following Jesus, he thought he was going to die. And he remembered that he was there in that storm simply because he was following the Lord. That's how he could say that. Well, that's our first point. It was Jesus who brought them into the storm. Secondly, Jesus brought them there in order to test them. Jesus brought them there in order to test them. After he had rebuked the wind and the waves, he issued two questions. Notice, after he says in verse 39, "Peace be still," and the wind ceased and there was a great calm, here's two questions in verse 40. "Why are you so afraid?" And then, "Have you still no faith?" The first question about being afraid is not accidental. And it's not an incidental, kind of a side issue for them. Now, in return, he does not want information. You see, this is not a quiz where they're having a written exam. No. What he's doing here is placing his finger on the real issues and questions they had. He was testing their faith. They had cried out in near panic. That's the strength of the language there in verse 38. "Teacher, don't you care that we're perishing?" The tone in the original is that of panic. They are terrified. And they ask him, "Don't you care?" Think about that for a minute. Why was he there? Why had he come? What was he doing? He was there because he cared, you see. He had already told them so. He would continue to tell them so throughout Mark's gospel. But it would only be much later before they realized that he was there because he cared. And because he cared, he would undergo the fierce wrath of God on their behalf. The scorching winds would buffet him on Calvary's Mount. Towering waves of anger would crash over his head. And death-dealing electrical bolts of God's anger would strike him and kill him. And he would take that because he cared. But yet at this point, they had not even begun to understand that. His second question, "Have you no faith?" Still no faith. It seems to penetrate even more deeply or deeper. Although they had seen matchless power and healings and miracles already early on in Mark's gospel, they had seen him to be utterly reliable in what he said, yet they still had not begun to trust him. What is he doing in this quiz, this testing of them? He is unraveling the fabric of their soul. He is asking them questions that really do matter. Not just that night on the Sea of Galilee, but for the rest of their lives. We do well to ask ourselves the same things. Do you trust him? I'm afraid to look at some of you in the face. I know you're going through things I do not face. I know this is a very real, live question to you. This is not a theoretical theology exam. Do you trust him? Do you know that he cares for you in the details of your life? He brought them there in order to test them. Notice with me, thirdly, not only that they were there because he brought them into the storm, he brought them there in order to test them. Thirdly, he brought them there in order to unveil his own identity. Notice verse 39. And he awoke and rebuked the wind and the wave. Peace, be still. And the wind ceased and there was a great calm. Now the words that Jesus uses here to against the wind and the waves are exactly the same words used in chapter 1 and verse 25 when he's exorcising demons. Interesting. We have a great storm. Verse 37. A great windstorm arose. That is replaced in verse 39 with a great calm. Notice the wind ceased and there was a great calm. And what would come after that? What else was great? Fear. Verse 41. They were filled with great fear. Three greats. A great storm, a great calm, and great fear. We get our English word mega. Mark is using it here. There was a mega storm. There was a mega calm. And there was mega fear. They just thought they were afraid during the storm. Now they really are frightened. Jesus intended them to see that he was subduing hostile forces that were against him and them, and that only God could do that. Whether it be threatening demonic forces, as in chapter 1, or it be a terrifying storm in chapter 4. His divine power, majesty, and glory were on display for them to see. He's unveiling himself, revealing himself to them. Who is he? They had barely begun to understand that. Often this passage is used to show that Jesus can calm the storm in our souls. I don't think that's what he did here. I think what he did here was create a storm in their souls. It was the very opposite. He created a storm in their hearts. This morning, I was just thinking about when I was getting ready to come to early worship. I thought about how clearly C.S. Lewis in a children's story puts this point. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. When the children are visiting with Mr. and Mrs. Beaver. And someone has begun to talk about this fella Aslan. And the children haven't met him yet. And one of the young people, one of the children, Lucy, says, is he a man? And Mr. Beaver responds, Aslan, a man? Certainly not. I tell you, he is the king of the wood and the son of the great emperor beyond the sea. Don't you know who the king of beasts is? Aslan is a lion, the great lion. Lucy would respond, then he isn't safe? Mr. Beaver says, safe? Of course not. Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. That's the point here. Jesus is not safe, y'all. And he may take you into the teeth of a storm. He may seem to be unraveling your soul. But he is good. And he will never leave you. And he will bring you through that and never turn loose. He's unveiling himself. It seems that at the end of the story, when they're filled with mega fear, they say, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" It's as though they were saying, "We thought that storm was bad. Forget the storm. Who's this guy in the boat?" They don't know. They're learning. He's not someone that they thought he was. You know, what if Peter, standing over Mark's shoulder as he writes his gospel, what if Peter, at the beginning of this story, had dug his heels in on the shoreline and said, "I'm not going with you. You're a carpenter. You don't know what you're doing out on the Sea of Galilee. I do. I'm a fisherman. And I know what is best." What if he had done that? Well, his life would have been impoverished. And in missing the storm, he would have missed Jesus. And in missing Jesus, he would have missed a breathtaking display of the glory of the Son of God. He would have missed it. I find it interesting that in Acts 12, when the sword of Rome is coming down on the infant church, James, the brother of John, has been executed. Simon Peter is arrested for preaching the gospel and thrown in jail. And there in Acts 12, verse 6, what do we find Peter doing? He's sleeping. He's sound asleep. How could he do that? At least in part, because he well remembered one night on the Sea of Galilee a long time ago when there was a storm. The early church, not surprisingly, their art, Christian art, depicted the church as a boat driven upon a perilous sea with Jesus in the midst and nothing to fear. That's the very language that Tertullian, one of the early church fathers, the lifelong resident of Carthage in North Africa, he wrote often to the emperor to defend Christianity. And in some of his writings, he saw the boat in this story as symbolizing the church and facing storms and waves of persecution from the Roman Empire. So, my friend, do you trust him? Do you know he cares for you?